You're listening to Your Music, Your Business, a podcast helping you to explore the business behind your music.
Hello all and welcome back to Your Music, Your Business. Today I'm joined by Jimmy, the booking agent for at Select Music for Teenage Jones, Yours Truly, Eliza and the Delusionals, LAB and Sons of the East. Welcome, Jimmy. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, to jump straight in, I like sent you these questions beforehand because I knew I was asking some pretty like heavy hitter questions. But my first one definitely is, what's the biggest lasting change that you have seen happen in the music industry space? Sorry, the live music space, I should say, over the last 6 years of your long career as a booking agent?
Well, I mean, it's pretty obvious, like you'd have to talk about COVID, right? And like the knock-on effects there. I mean, like things that are as small as like, I mean, not small to the people, but like venue closures, simple. Like that's, you know, that's something that's hard for artists, you know, especially ones that are germinating within their like local scenes, like having their venue close or like change management and putting a restaurant in instead or something like that is like very hard for bands to like overcome, you know, like where do you play first and foremost. But things like consumer confidence like was impacted by that. It's like, is this show even going to happen? Like, do I even buy tickets to this, or do I buy tickets very late? Like, you know, we're finding that people are just buying pre-sales like the week of the show just because of like their confidence has been diminished over the last few years they've just been trained to think like, oh, I can just buy tickets on the week, like it's not going to sell out, so it's fine. So yeah, that's a bit of a hangover there. But you know, aside from that, it's like disrupted touring plots, like artists who are supposed to do their album tour in 2020 are now having to like, you know, had to do it in 2022 and like sort of COVID-y still, like some seeded, I don't know, like disruption there, and like the disruption of growth is sort of like a long lasting effect. I think it wasn't just that they had a shitty tour. It's like, okay, well, they should have been here, but now they're sort of here. Not for every artist, but it's sort of a knock on effect. And then just sort of like a bit of an exodus within the music professional world, you know, like especially crew. You know, people just going, well, I can't tour, so I'm just going to do something else. So the hangover is real with COVID, but I think it's starting to get a little bit better. So we're all optimistic, you know, looking to the future.
I love that. I wanted to touch on something that you just sort of mentioned before, which was that artists are re-entering the live music scene with consumer confidence not necessarily there and not selling out places, so or like venues necessarily. So are you finding that musicians are maybe pitching themselves for smaller venues than they maybe would have pre-pandemic, with the markers of their other like social counts saying that they probably could sell out certain things?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think there's no shame in like playing to your ability. And I think that like, personally, I feel like the, you know, when you're trying to go to your next tour, you're always trying to go to the bigger venue. You're trying to like do, you know, more ticket sales, you know, grow the ticket price, everything like that. But I mean, I don't think there's any harm in going into the venue that's like the right size for you and for where people are buying tickets. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it can be perceived, I mean, traditionally it's been perceived as a like backward step, but I think the smarter artists are just playing in the venues that they know they can sell out at this present time. Like it doesn't have to, like you wouldn't go and put an artist in a bigger venue just because you did a smaller venue last time and you're trying to increase it. Like there's no like, you're not going to be validated in any way by doing the Metro if you haven't sold out Factory Theatre or like, did last time and won't be able to do it again. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's better to play within your ability 100%. So shame in that, I think.
Oh, definitely not. But yeah, I find it really fascinating how like different people in the music industry are picking up that, you know, maybe there's been a bit of a shift in the sort of artists that we expect to sell out certain venues and the venues that they are choosing to pick, but then also the ones that they end up, you know, selling out or being able to provide tickets. And, you know, in comparison, like really looking at like a very niche target here, but like
yeah.
you know, the viral TikTok artists that have, you know, have all these followers, millions of like, you know, followers on socials and stuff. And then they go put them in a live music venue and they're struggling to sell out what they like, what industry maybe would have expected pre-pandemic.
Totally. I think there's like a bit of a disconnect between the popularity of some artists on socials and what their reality of their ticket sales would be. And like, there's nothing wrong with that either. Like maybe they're just selling more music, you know, maybe there's just putting the streams up, or maybe like Zach touched on this last week with having a generation that isn't used to going to live shows. I think it's so true. It's like, you know, when I was like, when I turned 18, I was like going to clubs and to pubs and to whatever and discovering live music instead of having my entry that way. Where like, you know, the explosion of TikTok and artists who are like really just selling themselves to like 17-year-olds who are about to turn 18 go to shows. It's like they don't really have that pathway. That even their older siblings maybe didn't even go to shows. Like they have no way to like understand like, oh, this artist puts out music and then they play shows and then I go to the shows and I have a good time and I make friends with it. So kind of not in their like, it's not in their DNA, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's been erased over the last 3 years. So that might have something to do with it. I don't know. But like, the way that people consume music and engage with artists is completely different to how it was 5 years ago. So I don't know, there's a few factors in there. It's a weird soup of like...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, change it. Yeah, so
that's exactly right. There's no right or wrong answer with that one.
No, exactly. Yeah, it's all speculation, but yeah, it could be a bunch of things.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah. I think like even to add to, you know, part of that conversation, there's also a whole other aspect of the fact that there is, we're now, well, now this probably been around for a while, but we're seeing quite a significant lack of funding in like high school music and fostering new musicians and that sort of coming up through the ranks, and you know, only just now seeing, you know, what we call freezer committees. But for those of you who aren't, you know, listening from Australia, they're basically like government funded youth organizations that help support youth, if that's the right, do you think that's the right terminology?
Yes,
yeah. And they tend to help teach youth how to, you know, build live music and live events and be musicians and that sort of thing. And we're only just starting to see what that looked like, even say like, well, before my career, which was like 7-8 years ago, where that apparently that used to be so, so strong, and there'd be all these Battle of the Bands and like all these amazing bands that we see that are successful now have come from that space. And there hasn't been necessarily that in the last five years, I'd say.
Totally. And then so it's weird because there's like so many young bands that are doing so well. It's like, give the tools to people who want to do this stuff and like promote these bands that are young and great and making music in their bedroom that is streaming super well. Like, yeah, all the young kids are like making it happen. So
give them
the rocket fuel, let them do it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that sort of actually leads me into my next question of like, with the last 3 years and COVID and everything, have you seen much impact specifically on new developing acts and like the growth or the, what am I trying to say here, like are you seeing as many come through the ranks towards a space where you'd actually, you know, be able to work with them like in the same rate that you maybe would have pre-pandemic?
I think it's a tricky one because I mean, usually agents are like looking at artists that are starting to have a bit of a national appeal or have some kind of demand for, you know, like it might be that they have some solid radio play or they've just done their headline shows in other cities, you know, they're starting to like actually get out there. But I'm finding that it's harder than ever to like break emerging artists. Mm-hmm. I mean, purely just because it's hard for the big artists to sell tickets as well. You know what I mean? I mean, some are different, but like, you know, generally ticket sales are down. And I feel like even if people are engaging the artists, it's like, do they want to spend $20 to go and see, or even less to go and see this emerging artist that they kind of know when it's going to be an Uber and it's going to be food and it's like still going to be $150 a night. They're like, oh, fuck, probably not. Like maybe if I had some extra cash, I'd go out, but maybe I'll just stay home and like play Settlers of Catan with my friends. Save up when like a big artist comes out that's from overseas or whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's kind of hard. Like, I feel like people aren't as willing to just go out. And like, yeah, it's hard to sort of like cultivate a crew that will come and support your bands, you know.
Yeah,
they don't want to spend stuff money on that. So I mean, shows are the first thing to go, and I feel like the smaller ones sort of like, yeah, it's cheaper, but it's still kind of not, because I still got to go out and pay for all this other shit. Like, yeah. I don't know if I want to go. Yeah, do that
exactly. So. Yeah, and like coming from a management perspective with working with new and emerging artists, it's like this is literally the bane of my existence.
Yeah, totally. The other part is like emerging artists that would. Usually, there'd usually be a whole bunch of festival slots for them to play, and like, you know, play the local slot or like play the touring opening slot of a festival, or whatever. But it's like a lot of these festivals are looking overseas for their talent now, and the amount of Australian acts are just so like the list is small. There's only slots for you to like choose from. So that's a big thing that you rely on to grow your artist, and sometimes it's just not there, you know.
Yeah.
Also it's like support tours, like, I mean, I don't think the budgets have changed too much for like your support act, but the cost of touring for those small artists is like, what do you do with $500? Like, it's like, it's not even a flight for like one and a half of you, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, it doesn't go as far. It's sort of harder to do that. And also like those younger bands who are like, you know, they might be in their really early 20s, they're working like a cafe job or something small on the side to like make music work. It's like, fuck, it's actually really hard to take time off because I still got to pay rent and the band ain't making money. So do I want to go on tour? Maybe I don't need to do this. Like, you know, so there's heaps of factors for young bands. I feel like it's really hard for them. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think I'm already seeing from my perspective, like a ripple effect of the last 3 years and a lack of new bands that have just not formed to help, you know, support even like the band that's doing well in the scene and starting to build and emerge, because, you know, they in the last 3 years they weren't fostered to stay together and to, you know, be in their garage and make music. Like, they were all inside and, you know, doing things by themselves or separately, or not really seeing an industry that was fostering them. So you're seeing the ripple effect already of like not having new and emerging or like, sorry, brand new bands and solo projects come through, which then makes it harder for those emerging acts to actually get supports.
Yeah.
And it just has a ripple effect all the way up, which I find really fascinating.
Totally. And like, there were so many like new acts in 2019 that were like really promising, and they just sort of like became what I call COVID casualties. It's like, you know, starting to like get some radio play and go interstate or whatever. Like, life was hunky dory back then in 2019, the glory days.
Yeah.
And then like, I just feel like it, by no fault of their own, it just sort of like has dropped off for some of them, which sucks. It really does.
Yeah.
But then there are others who like kind of like came up during COVID that are doing super well. You know, I look after an artist called Teenage Dones, and they won Unearth High in 2020, so like peak COVID. but they seem to be going like strength to strength. Like, you know, we did their first headline ticketed tour last year, went into double shows, and like did like much better than we thought. You know, playing major festivals, doing great. But some of their counterparts that were coming up just the year prior that deserved all the same stuff that Teenage Jones got, I feel like got a little bit stitched up because of the pandemic stuff, which is a shame.
And I think it had, as we said before, it's like all one big soup, but it had a lot to do with like how much those people within the band could adapt and use social media to its advantage and you know, really like take on what was being thrown at them. And then the others that were sort of just trying to ride it out, trying to see how they like what to do, and a lot of them trying to sit on their music and then realizing at the end of it as we came out, it's like, well, it's still really expensive.
Totally. But also no one had the answer to like how to survive COVID, you know. It's a 100 year pandemic, and like there's nothing written about how the music industry like
can,
you know what I mean? Like, no, everyone was in the deep end with no floaties in COVID. Like,
yeah.
Some bands took the route of like just being you know, going away and writing music and like not doing much and coming up with great records that did super well. And then some didn't do well, and it's like there was no live to like back it. I don't know. I feel like live is still such a big driver of sales for records. And like, it's a great way to promote your music. So when you don't have that live element in your strategy, it's like fucking hard.
It's so hard, even just to like really try and make any sort of like money or recruitment back in any way on the like the money that you spend on marketing and recording and everything. Like it's, yeah, pretty, it was pretty brutal. And I think like we got this really beautiful sweet spot when we came out and international couldn't come over, where, you know, Australian music tried to have this huge boost. Mm. And then as soon as International X came in, it was like everyone like sort of went, oh shit.
Yeah.
We're all just like going for the same support slots now.
Totally. Because like, you know, I mean, aside from support, I mean, just artists that are trying to compete with the internationals, even the small internationals coming out, it's like let's take Beach Bunny, for example. I love that band. I went and saw them. They're awesome. Yeah. I'm sure that I don't know what tickets were, but I'm sure they were probably like $60. I'm going to say 65. Mm. There are artists that are making similar music to Beach Bunny, probably the same size, trying to sell their $35 ticket, but they can't because Beach Bunny's coming over. It's like a, you know, I'd rather go and see them and pay double and just miss out on the Australian artists. You know what I mean? I'll probably see this Australian artist at a festival sometime down the track, whatever. But meanwhile, they're like, no, we need to sell the tickets to prove to festivals that we can do this, that we'll be at a festival later in the year, you know? So, but that, you know, that kind of competition for internationals coming over has affected all kinds of levels, not just that one, but, you know, even the bigger ones trying to go out and do a tour, it's like, it's difficult.
Yeah. Well, I do want to sort of touch a little bit more on ticket sales. And I think maybe we've sort of answered this question a little bit, but how are you finding ticket sales are going currently? And do you feel that we're still feeling the effects of COVID-19 and people's eagerness to people's social abilities since lockdown is what I should say.
I think, yeah, like it's a slight COVID hangover, but I think more about a cost of living type thing, you know, like I said, like shows are the first to go. Out of like your budget, like you'd rather, like I think Zach was saying this last week, like you'd rather spend money on groceries and making sure that you can put petrol in your car than like go to the local artist, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, they're always the first to go when times are tough, but I mean sometimes like I mean there are still artists that are going out and selling great tickets. For example, I booked this artist, Sons of the East, who are a folk artist, kind of quiet achievers. They're not a Triple J band, but they just went and did a 14-date tour, 10 shows sold out, went into doubles in a lot of places, sold out Metro on a $55 ticket. And they didn't seem to be affected by the slow ticket sales at all. They just had a great record and we didn't play that much. And we did that and it was great. But then there are other artists that are on the opposite side who also still had great records and also still did like all the right things, strategized their live shows and didn't do too much to oversaturate and still came out with poor ticket sales. So yeah, it's kind of, it's much harder to read the tea leaves of like what's going to happen and why it's happening. So ticket sales seem to be a bit like unpredictable, I'd say. I wouldn't say they're bad or good, but yeah, it's bad or good depending on which artist you ask, I really.
And do you think, what was this the same when you first started as well? Like you're not really able to tell when tickets, like how tickets would sell, or were you pretty confident you could sell certain tickets at certain times?
It was pretty, it was much easier to predict where you'd go, you know. You could judge it on a few different things. But now it's like, I mean, artists with great music just didn't sell tickets. And like some artists that put out some okay music sold tickets really well. So I don't know, like I feel like prior it was like, okay, like this record is good. Let's not go fucking crazy with the jump. Let's try and sell a couple hundred tickets, more tickets in each city and go that route. But it would seem to be a bit more like playbook. This is what you do to like grow the artist. Whereas now it's like, fuck, who knows? Do we have to think outside the box? Do we have to do a boat cruise? Do we have to like,
yeah, bring back the boat cruises. Let's do it.
Like, do we have to get creative with this? I think the answer is yes. Yeah. And the other side of that is like, there seems to be a lot of co-headline tours going on, like artists coming together to like make tours happen. I had Eliza and Delusionals do a co-headline tour with the boys because they seem to be at a similar level, similar wins, both on Triple J. you know, sonically similar-ish. And we were like, both of us want to do a regional tour, but neither of us want to like go out and do it alone. So we're like, let's buddy them up. Like, that makes sense. See how we go. It was a good tour. And I just got announced today, Stand Atlantic, and slowly doing one.
That was really cool.
Yeah, it's a cool one. And they got some cool supports in there too. But they, you know, we're doing Ruby Fields and Hockey Dad.
Nice.
That's a cool tour, and Dear Seattle supporting. But like, yeah, I feel like people are sort of going, shit, sales are a bit soft and we want to do a meaningful tour. Maybe we should band with somebody else. So yeah, creativity. Yeah.
Do you think they're doing that from a trying to save money perspective, or from a trying to utilize this, like the social, like the fans and the audience that each of them have to try and build, push them into the same shows?
I think bands make less money doing co-headline shows, but it is a way to get a whole bunch of people in the room and like have meaningful shows. So that's kind of why you do it, you know?
Yeah. And it makes for great social content too, doesn't it?
Totally, yeah, for real. And like, I mean, like the Ruby and Hockey Dad thing, I had nothing to do with that. That was all Casey and Harry from Lonely Lands did that side, did the Hockey Dad side. But yeah, the promo that went out for that was great. It was cool. Mm-hmm. And I think having two bands with different personalities that are equally as good as each other on socials is a good thing. Like,
yeah,
makes for great content.
Oh, but yeah.
once you split the costs and split, you know, support fees or whatever in half, it's like, okay, cool, we're paying less on the road, but you also can't charge too much for tickets, because it's like, shit, if like, can we really get away with like a $60 ticket on this one? Like, yeah. I don't think so. Like, because we're both trying to make $30, but like, so you end up with a ticket price that is reasonable that you split in half. So I don't know. But it is about just getting people into the same room and like, you know, making memories, making it a meaningful tour instead of just trying to like chug away it on your own. So, but that's just one creative way to like to do it, I guess. There's plenty of ways to make it a fun tour, add something else that's a bit different.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. There's probably a whole episode just based around ticket pricing there's been some really interesting conversations about pushing up ticket pricing. This was it was very early after pandemic, but there was a whole conversation about us pressuring people to put up ticket pricing, but a whole other conversation I think that one would be, and probably a better conversation to be had after we've gone through all this, like, you know, financial upheaval that we're about to have, I think.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, we'll see you on the other side, see what happens.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully in like a year or so, you know, because we'll just think positive, you know.
Everyone gets rich in the next year and just goes to shows every night of the week. That'd be great. Yeah.
We're putting it out into the universe for everyone.
Yeah, okay? Please. Everyone gets rich. Let's go. Yeah.
Well, I think my next question sort of like touches a little bit on this as well, and things we've already discussed, but how are you currently finding the eagerness of musicians to get on the road and play shows? And are you finding that the competition is fierce, like surrounding your current artist when trying to book like tours and shows and things like that?
I think artists want to go out and tour for sure. I mean, I don't think it's like I said, it's a bit hard because it's expensive, and like sometimes the smaller artists can't really get off work. But I mean, the artists who are career artists want to go out and play shows. Like that's sort of like, it is the way that they validate how their music is performing, is by seeing it live, and like by sort of like, that's their way to engage with the fans. So yeah, I don't think it's really affected, you know, their eagerness to go and play for sure. I think that's like, I feel like live shows are recession proof. It will come out the other side because people will always want to play and people will always want to go and see that. So
I'm just from a manager perspective, I'm like, yeah. And on the either side of those conversations, like you being keen to book it and the musician being keen to go, there's a manager in the middle being like, we can't afford this
yet. Yeah, totally. Yeah, fully. There's also the other side where like me as the agent going like, hey, let's play some shows. And then you, the manager, having to like convince the artist, and I don't see that. So, but I mean, like the artists I talk to who are friends, like, I don't know, they all seem to be just as eager as they were before COVID, like to play a million shows. So
yeah, exactly. Well, for most of them, that's what they were born to do. So
exactly.
You know,
exactly. That's the fun.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to booking tours currently, are you finding it's more financially viable for musicians to do a week-long block or to chop it up into sections?
I mean, you sell more tickets on the weekend. So, like, people aren't, I mean, depending on who you are, like, sometimes you'll play a Wednesday show, but, yeah, Monday to Wednesday is a bit rough. It's just usually better on a weekend, so we try and do it like that. But also we're trying to make it, like, make sense geographically because, like, you know, don't want an artist darting around the country just to, like, play the days they want to play or whatever. So, we try to keep their preferences in mind when they're touring. Like, if they're driving everywhere, it's like, okay, let's make sure that the drives aren't more than 3 hours so they can actually have some sleep. They don't have to go overnight to, like, make a Sydney to Melbourne trip, you know what I mean? Unless they want to. I mean, we've all done that too, so that's cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, routing a tour, it's like, it's not always like a 5-date national tour. Sometimes it's a 40-date tour and you're trying to get the best nights of the week in the best venues in the right cities or whatever. And it's like sometimes a little hard. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, it breaks up depending on what the artist is, are and doing.
Yes. On the tour,
you know what I mean? So, yeah, who are they? Like, what do they want to do? Like, are they playing a million shows? They're just playing two. Like, what? Yeah, what are they trying to do?
So. Yeah. Do you find that there's more of a shift in the last few years around, like, mental health and musicians pushing back on wanting to do the full 24-hour stopover if they really don't have to?
I think the pushback during COVID was playing two shows in one night and then doing that the next night and doing that the next night. So it was like, you know, the double session thing, that's where I get the most pushback. But, like, as far as, like, standard touring, like, we as a company have always been, like, pretty mental health focused. Like, our CEO, Steve, is, like, a huge advocate for, like, mental health within music, you know. When you know, he's a big mentor to me and he's, like, always taught me to make sure that the artist is looked after on the road and to, like, not overdo it for them, you know? And part of that is, like, just being as receptive as possible when the artist has to either cancel a show or give you some direction on how they want to tour. I mean, for the most part, like, we'll give a tour to a manager and they'll go, looks great, it feels great. We'll feel worried about the artist going out. But occasionally you'll have an artist that might be a bit more sensitive to being on the road, so you just got to take some extra care with them, which is, like, honestly no skin off my nose to do that. Yeah. Like, it's not that hard. Like,
yeah.
So, I mean, the well-being of the artist on the road is the most important thing. And that's something that we can help control. So if it's within our control and we can make the artist feel more comfortable on the road somehow, then, yeah, we'll do it. We have a safe spaces clause in a lot of our contracts, particularly for non-male artists who are trying to get on the road and actually feel comfortable in each venue. So that's just the extra level as well to just make sure that everyone's nice and comfy. Aside from, like, actual routing of the tour, it's like when they're in the venue, like, is the staff calling them by the right name? They're calling them by a pet name or something. Are there gender neutral toilets? Are there, you know, is the rider there? Is it, like, all that sort of stuff is, like, a bit of extra care for the artists on the road, you know? I feel like it goes a good way. Yeah,
definitely. And I think I'm sure a lot of artists would find that really refreshing. I have a friend who has a TikTok, like, has a band, is in a heavy band, and she sometimes films her TikToks of, like, and on this week's episode of really dodgy green rooms we have, and it's just,
yeah,
like,
I saw that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh. And then, like, the next week it's like they've gone and played for, like, a festival and it's, like, the most bougie room, and she's like, what is going on?
That is a roller coaster that artists have to deal with, especially in the emerging level where it's like, you know, you might not get a ride for, like, the first 2 or 3 years of your career, maybe, but, like, yeah, it's a ride.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, I went to a show for one of my artists the other week, and there was like a rider for us as well, and I was like, oh, this is weird. I'm like, I'm loving it.
Yeah, what a treat.
Yeah. Which is, like, it's an interest that is a very interesting conversation in itself, I think, at the moment, and the the shift on venues for writers, and also bands feeling comfortable to even ask for writers, like, because as we both sort of said, like, within their first few years, we almost don't, because we feel like we're, you know, maybe not worth the value of a writer yet. But
yeah,
realistically,
what happens.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, they won't do it, but they maybe they will, you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. You can only ask.
Exactly right. That's all you can do.
Yeah. Well, yeah, from like a lighter note, within Australia, where are you finding the best locations to book tours within currently? Is there like a particular state that seems most enthusiastic to host bands or has the best funding?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel like there's a particularly stronger state. I would probably say like there's probably more competition on the East Coast. So it's like maybe sales are a bit slow in some of those spots. But I mean, like, places that weren't selling tickets before, like Hobart and Perth, seem to like weirdly be doing like quite well on tickets. I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'm gonna keep sending bands to these spots, but
yeah.
I don't know. But since, I mean, I've been trying to send artists out to do regional tours and like start growing that a little bit more, because I feel like come next year, you know, when some of these artists are trying to do their album tours, it's like, where should we discover somewhere like that actually sells tickets in Australia for you guys, and then include that on an album tour later? Maybe that's the way. So, you know, like with that Sons of the East tour, we just found some like great gems by playing like through Australia in random spots that we'd never been to before. Like, we added a show in Torquay, and they'd never even been there, never supported a band there, like we didn't even know if we had listeners there. There was an opportunity to take a deal that like made sense for them to go there and add it to the tour after we'd already announced the tour. We're like, oh, we'll just add Torquay. And they did like 400 tickets. And we're like, what the hell? Like, how did you sell that many there? Like, we're definitely going back to Torquay on the next tour. So, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like go regional, find some places you might have some fans, but be smart about it. But, you know, have a look at where people are actually listening. Yeah. But yeah, to answer your question, I don't think there is a particularly stronger state, but
regional's been surprising. Yeah, I think even from a like from a strategy point of view of like doing certain shows prior to, you know, big album tours and things like that, is a really interesting strategy. And more so to that, like, I've really found trying to have musicians from like a really early stage actually trying to do all ages shows is a really great strategy to try and get like those super fans when they're like literally, you know, in that space where they can literally spend their parents' money to be super fans. and like catching them on the way up as they, you know, but as they grow up with you, basically.
Totally. I mean, I don't book them, this is a Rob G act, but Teenage Dads, who were Select Music, they just like, for some reason, I'm not sure why, it might be TikTok, I'm not sure, but they're like all ages fans just like went through the roof. I went and saw them at Metro and it was sold out, and I happened to be in the city like 4 hours before doors and there were people there and I was like, what the fuck is going on here? I was like, I'd never seen a line that long at Metro. And when I watched the show, the crowd were louder than the PA at Metro Theatre. I was like, I could not believe it. They're like, they couldn't max it out anymore. It was like super loud. But they just sort of fanned the fire on the all ages thing, and now they added a whole bunch of all ages sets in the next tour. So, you know, you gotta just like test the waters and on what works for you live, and like just roll with that. Really, they did it super well, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And feed it and foster it, not just do it once.
Totally.
There's definitely some artists that like go out there and they'll do like a freezer show or whatever, and then they're like, yeah, oh, that did all right. And you're like, yeah, but you've got to do it again.
Totally. Yeah, fully. I mean, same with Teenage Jones. Like, we decided to add an all ages show because it was something that the girls really wanted to do in Melbourne. And we ended up selling an extra 300 tickets in Melbourne, which were like 80% of them were under 18. So we're like, fuck, next time we tour, we got to do some licensed all ages shows for sure, because it seems like you got fans there. But we wouldn't have known it if we didn't do it. So, yeah,
exactly.
Try different things, see what happens, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And then, like, I found a really interesting one come up recently where this band called Royal Otis, they are playing in Melbourne coming up, and their evening show had sold out. Their all ages show that started at 1 p.m. on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Was almost sold. And then they also had a Sunday show. I'm like, they're going to sell all of these. And this is wild.
Fully. Yeah. It's awesome. I mean, yeah, the kids want to go to shows. Cool. Let them.
Exactly. Let them. I know. Yeah. Well, I want to throw you a nice question.
Yeah.
And that is, what is your biggest career win to date?
Oh, okay. I like this question.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've been very fortunate to have some like really fun things happen. And like none of the like big deals or like the big tours have like been as fulfilling as like some of the more wholesome moments. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I get more of a kick out of artists like meeting their heroes or like selling out their first show or something like that. That's more fulfilling to me. And I would consider that a bigger win than like making a bunch of money. Do you know what I mean? We announced today that Teenage Jones are going to support Foo Fighters.
So cool.
Those girls grew up listening to that. Like their dads did, like I did too. So for me, like that's a career moment. Like I love the Foo Fighters. Like that's going to be awesome.
Especially because you'll pretty much get a free ticket, right?
Yeah, exactly. I said the Fooey's for the eighth time. I love them. But like, you know, I book a band called Towns from Adelaide who are just two of the sweetest people ever. And there was a moment where they were thinking about sort of hanging up the hat and like not playing anymore. And this was like pre-COVID. And we decided to just do a Christmas show just for fun. No new music to back it or anything, just decided to like put a bunch of their mates on. Like maybe that was going to be the last one, not ever, but like for a while. No expectations, decided to do the small room at Lion Arts, which is like 200 tickets. And then as soon as we put it on sale, it sold out. And we're like, shit, I think we have to move this to the big room, which we did. And like, they sold that out. And so they like could not believe it. Like they were like, what the hell? We sold this venue out that we've like been coming to since we were kids to like see our heroes play. Like that is insane. And like Aston called me the next day and was like, I just want to be in this band forever. Like that was a big like life changer. And I'm like, got a lump in my throat being like, yeah, that's so good. that's a career highlight. You know what I mean? Like those moments, like that's why I do it. Like I don't care how much money we made off that show. It was about them like finding some purpose within their music and wanting to continue. Like that was cool, you know. Those are the big moments that I like, you know.
Yeah, it's so funny you say that because those are the moments in my like artist management career as well. Like I think the two that hit me the most is like I helped an artist who's no longer around, Snark. They had been a band for like 6 years at this time after I started working with them. And I, within our first release of working together, I got them, like helped them to get Triple J by connecting them with the right people. And they got Triple J play and it was like mid lockdown or whatever. And they all started like phoning me at 9 p.m. And I'm like, what the hell's going on? And they're like, oh my God, Jazz, this is so cool. And they're like almost like tears streaming down their face.
I'm yeah,
like,
fully.
This is what this is about.
Like helping artists achieve their goals, no matter like what they are, is like fulfilling, I think.
And then also standing in a sold out room. Like I remember with Preside, I like did a sold out room with them in a room that we didn't think we'd ever sell out to. It was like double what I was actually comfortable with.
Totally.
And then we sold it out. I was like, I vividly remember me standing at the back and tears rolling down my face because I was so proud.
Sometimes like it's more exciting seeing an artist sell out like Oaf Gallery Bar to like 150 kids than it is like on your like big show. You know what I mean? Like it's like, yes, this little band did it. Like the little band that could, and they like made it happen. And like, that's exciting. It's their first sellout. Like, I don't know. I feel like if you gotta like really just soak in those little moments more than, I don't know. I don't know if there's many people in this industry that just want to do it for the money only. Like, you're pretty crazy if you do.
Yeah.
But, like, savoring those little moments, like, that's the best part.
Exactly.
That's the good fire fuel that I have in my brain, hopefully forever. Yeah.
Exactly right. I totally agree. And that sort of leads me to my last question of our episode today. When you're 90 years old and in retirement home and wanting to brag to your roommate about what you did during your long life, what would you like to say to them?
Well, hopefully it's been so good that I can't remember all of them, but I would probably say, like, honestly, and I don't know if this is like too Hallmark card and sappy and boring, but honestly, just like the friends I've made through music, it's like that's the biggest, like, coolest part of this industry, I think. Mm. It attracts people like you who are like crazy and love music and like want to make it your life. Like, when you find someone else that's like that, it's like you could chat to them for days, like we're doing right now. This could go on for forever, but yeah, the 60-minute limit, we gotta cut this shit, you know. But because you're the same as me, but like, I think when I'm 90 and I'm flexing on my roommate, I'd be like, huh, I made a shitload of friends doing this. And there are many good moments.
An old mate from such and such band coming over in an hour.
Yeah, exactly. They live here too. Love it.
Yeah. Or actually the best one would be if you all were in the same retirement home. Now that'd be
cool. Real. A retirement home for music industry people.
Someone's going to get behind it.
It sounds like Big Sound, but like make it old. Old Sound. Let's call it that. Yeah.
Trademarked. I've got it. I'm going to go get it.
Oh, no. Give me 10%. It's all good.
I love it. As long as you book the old musician talent.
Yes.
Then let's go.
Oh, I can't wait to see all those old bands do their RSL tours. They'll do the nursing home circuit too. That's cool.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my god. And then like I'm just imagining, because like half the people would actually have tinnitus. They'd all have to have like headphones on.
Yeah. Completely losing hearing. Can you imagine like Parkway Drive, but like at the nursing home?
Oh, good.
Turning up real loud so they can hear it. Love it. Yeah.
Oh, God. I love this. This is a great idea. We're onto something. Oh, too funny. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Jimmy. It was great to have a chat about all things live music.
Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.